Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Broken.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Gimp today, I guess. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club today. We are into Storm of Swords, Tyrion, Chapter 1.
Yeah, wow. Guys, if you're wondering why we switched up our intro today, I mean, I don't know, just crazy little past 2 weeks for Jimmy and I here. You know, I was complaining to Jimmy a couple weeks ago. I was like, man, I'm having some like pain in my knee and stuff like that. And, you know, a doctor's visit, a CT scan, a chiropractic visit, a urgent care trip. Later, within the span of like 1 week, turns out I have a slipped disc in my back. So for those of you watching, I'm actually... You're just going to see images today because I'm standing and it looks really weird on camera. So
you look really, really tall.
Only Jimmy's going to see it. And so I have my microphone in a slightly different position. So if audio is affected or anything, that would be why. But I mean, Jimmy, we all just got health stuff going on here. So
yeah, I got to get this. I got a cyst that's developed in my cheek. I got to get that cut out. So I'm going to get the old Joker smile, scar on my face. But I was doing some jiu-jitsu the other night and got my knee popped, which is really unfortunate. So I have an ortho appointment here at the end of the week, but I'm thinking it's either my lateral meniscus or my LCL. Either way, not very cash money, as the kids would say.
Definitely not. Both of us taking some major L's right now. But you know what? Hey, it's perfect because we're talking about the Tyrion chapter this weekend. Hey, one of the things Tyrion is dealing with is what's left of his face.
Yes, right? He had a little bit of a botched surgery, you could say. He did not get the pristine nose job that he may have been hoping for.
Yeah, so with that, guys, we'll dive in. I guess, do we have any news before we get going, Jimmy? Anything? I know you and I were talking about potentially bringing somebody on. That could be maybe like a guest appearance. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think early in March, you know, I have a friend named Joanna from Joanna Reads over on YouTube. She runs a wonderful book-centered channel, and she is currently rereading A Song of Ice and Fire, and she just finished up Game of Thrones. I think it's her first reread in almost 10 years or something like that. And she has a lot to say. She did a great discussion panel on that on her channel, but I've extended the invitation out to have her come and join us and just kind of talk about her experience with book one, you know, Game of Thrones all over again. So I think she'll be joining us sometime early March to kind of come discuss, fawn over the masterpiece that is A Game of Thrones. So look out for that, everybody. And I think it's going to be a really good time. And Joanna is a wonderful person and super well spoken. So it'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, definitely try to always bring more people on the podcast, you know, when we can. You know, we're talking about potentially doing a rewatch of the show. I've actually been watching some like clips and stuff on TikTok. They've been popping up and I'm just like, whew, back in it. I've been posting more TikToks and short content as well. Some crazy theories I've been posting, and I'm honestly surprised by some of the responses, right? I did one on, is Varys a merman? I did one on Alistair on is Roose Bolton a vampire, which is ones we've covered on the podcast before that are certainly fun. But another one I did is Alistair Thorne in Winds of Winter. Because you and I talked about that a little bit. I think just briefly, we were touching on a handful of things and we were talking about, you know, potentially what is his role going to be like? And so, you know, that's something that we are definitely going to do some full episodes on. And we've been doing more Patreon content as well. And so you can definitely go check a lot of that stuff on. But I think that's some of the things we're going to be doing, especially over on Patreon, is like the rewatch and just like, hey, look, looking at all these characters, be like, all right, let's do it like a Winds of Winter dive into what we think could potentially, you know, could potentially happen. So, okay, well, with that, let's move on to Tyrion 1 from A Storm of Swords. So I guess really the last time we saw Tyrion was the Battle of Blackwater.
It all went dark.
Yeah, it all went dark. And he's going to be waking up here to sort of a new world, right? Which is sort of interesting to kind of think about, right? And this might be one of the things I think why John might get resurrected in Winds of Winter, but that's it. And then it's sort of, when we jump into that final book, it could be sort of maybe a similar thing to what we see here with Tyrion, where, you know, you go back to the last book, A Clash of Kings, and Tyrion's really, he sort of rolls into... he sort of rolls into the Red Keep and King's Landing on top, right?
Yeah,
he rolls in. He sort of says, "Hey, guess what? I'm Hand of the King. All right, I'm making some changes. Deal with it." Mm-hmm. And he's riding high until the Battle of Blackwater, and now everything has totally changed. He's not even in his room anymore. He's been moved to a different room. So that's where we'll start here. So read the summary here. So Bronn visits Tyrion, who is recovering from his wounds. He finds that much has changed in King's Landing under his father's rule. He also realizes that his father has seen to it that Tyrion received little of the credit for saving the city. Bronn has been knighted and now goes by Sir Bronn of the Blackwater. Lord Jacelyn Bywater was killed by his own men during the Battle of the Blackwater, and Sir Adam Marbrand was named commander of the city watch. Cersei has returned Tommen to the city, and the Kettle Blacks, now all knights, are no longer working for Tyrion. His cousin Tyreek has still not been found and is feared dead. Additionally, Tyrion's mountain clansmen have been chased out of the city. Some remain in the Kingswood, but others return to the Vale. Tyrion asks Bronn to learn more about Sir Mandon Moore, trying to discover if his sister sent the Kingsguard to kill him. Tyrion forces himself to dress and visit his father, despite the near captivity in Maegor's Holdfast by his sister. Lord Tywin reveals that some battles are won by quills and ravens and is in the process of composing letters. The Hand tells his son that Sir Halman Tallheart and Robert Glover are marching on Duskendale, but he has sent Lord Randall Tarly and Sir Gregor to deal with them. Tyrion seeks a little gratitude from his father, but Lord Tywin tells him mummers and monkeys require applause. Tyrion states that he wants Casterly Rock, as he is heir by rights, since Jaime is a sworn brother of the Kingsguard. Tywin will never let Tyrion have the Lannister's ancestral seat, however, and he warns him that he will hang the next whore Tyrion takes to bed. So, as we sort of said, Jimmy, it's really kind of... you know, I think if you look at a lot of these first few chapters in A Storm of Swords, they all sort of feature like another big sort of dramatic shift. And I, you know, George sort of does this with our main characters. It almost feels like all of our main characters at the end of one of the books go through pretty dramatic changes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think about like just where Daenerys is at the end of A Game of Thrones to where she is at the beginning of A Clash of Kings. Even Tyrion, right? I mean, Tyrion spends his first book sort of, okay, he goes to Winterfell. He's just kind of, I get to go do whatever I want. He runs into Catelyn Stark and things change. He's on the run and he gets knocked down a peg. Now he gets lifted up a peg. And now he's here and he's at almost his lowest of lows. I mean, it'll get even lower, but it's certainly a huge thing. We just did that Arya chapter and Arya is now making that shift from Arya Stark to Ari to now, okay, she's beginning this sort of learning and using some of the things that she learned from Jaqen H'ghar to sort of shift her. And Tyrion's sort of the same thing here. This is where I feel like Tyrion really has to start playing the Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, yeah, I totally agree with you. And we kind of see Tyrion. Remember, when we run into Tyrion, he is very much just the dwarf brother who is always messing up. His father hates him. He's kind of accepted that. And he kind of plays into the role of being like the dunce almost, even though he's obviously well-read. And then in Clash of Kings, he gets some power. He gets some responsibility. You know, it's like the son coming home from fraternity and being able to run the family business for a summer. And it turns out he's pretty good at it. And he's also in love with it. He loves the power. He loves having people actually have to kind of heed his words. And Bronn is obviously his right-hand man. He feels like he has the muscle. And maybe for the first time, he feels like a giant. And what we see here, like you said, is like waking up in an entirely different timeline, in a different world. Not only was he out pretty much for an entire month, but he almost dies. That's what we learn in this chapter, that he almost dies. He comes back from that. And the most important transition in this book and what we see develop through this entire book and what George puts on Tyrion is this is Tyrion slowly delving into a super paranoid state, into a very everyone's out to get me mindset. And he's not wrong. That's the thing, is that he's not wrong, but I don't think he helps himself very much. And you can kind of start seeing in this chapter, he's not playing the game very well, is he? Going in and demanding something from his father. Now, is that because he's on the milk of the poppy? Or is that because he's just so fed up and he can't help but have his emotions get the best of him? But going in and demanding something from his father, I feel like he kind of showed his cards too soon. And unfortunately, this is the beginning of the downfall of Tyrion Lannister. And we will remember this conversation when we think about the end of the book and the last conversation that Tyrion has with his father. And it's a pretty interesting point that this starts out with basically Tyrion being told that he will never be his son, that like he will never have Casterly Rock, which Casterly Rock. Tongue twister for me for some reason, is something so important to Tyrion. And I think it's to legitimize himself, to not be seen as an outcast. And he talks very much about wanting to burn it down in other scenes and other books. He has dragon dreams even, which, you know, we've kind of talked about. Maybe Cersei flees to Castle Rock at some point if Aegon takes the throne. And who knows, maybe Tyrion is on a dragon with Dany and burns Castle Rock. Who knows? Who knows? But I just love this chapter. I think it kind of, like you said, it's the beginning of a new arc for Tyrion, and things are going to get really, really bad very, very soon. And also Tyrion and Tywin talking. I mean, come on. Those are the best scenes in the entire series for me. So this is A+1.
Yeah. And I'm going to go one step further, you know, because one of the things that I think we often forget, again, as we're often influenced by the show, and I was sort of thinking about it too, just as you were talking there, one of the things we really sort of forget about, because it's just like the way fan art does everything, is Tyrion loses, I mean, he loses his nose.
Yes.
It's not like in the show, he just gets a scar, and it's still Peter Dinklage who plays him.
He's handsome.
Yeah. I mean, he is. And so you have that going for it. So It's another thing where it's like he's turned from just like, oh, he's a funny, you know, little dwarf and, you know, whatever, to now like he has sort of that monster-ness to him that I think it's easier for people to sort of eat that much more, turn away from him, because now when they see him, he's disfigured. It was one thing when he was just sort of a dwarf.
Yeah.
Now he's a disfigured, monstrous little dwarf. And it's so much easier for people to just view him and be like disgusted or whatever. It might honestly even be because we're never going to get more info on it. So if you just sort of look at the character of Shay, this actually could be something that sort of, because her story is still so secretive, like this actually could be another reason why she actually turns away from him. I still like love the whole angle of maybe Tywin was behind it somehow. Maybe he paid her to sort of be a test to Tyrion, which is still totally true and possible. Especially if you just look at the show, right? A lot of the storyline continues just as it does in the books, but you don't have that angle of him like losing his nose and, you know, pretend like, you know, almost like skeletal.
Well, and his stock is, you know, his stock is
absolutely.
And if Shay wants to be a climber, or be in the good graces of people who matter. I mean, let's be honest, Tyrion in this book begins to plummet. Also, on top of that, he ends up getting married in this book. So that clearly has an issue. But I've always enjoyed the idea that maybe Shay was sent from Dorne. And, you know, maybe the reason why Tywin's on the pot at the end of the book is because she had been poisoning him. Or, I mean, there's a lot of craziness out there about this.
And we'll dive into it when we get there.
Yeah, for sure. But you're right. This disfigurement is massive. And we don't get that in the show because Dinklage is just a handsome Chad of a man. And Tyrion is disfigured outwardly. And I think that begins to show the descent of his inner self as well. And we see him do some pretty heinous things in future books. That's rough. That's really rough. And I've made the case, and a lot of other people have as well, that Tyrion is somewhat of a villain post A Storm of Swords. And at the very end of Storm of Swords, we will see him kind of make that first step where he is intentionally trying to hurt someone, which is sad. But the disfigurement absolutely plays a role in all of this, for sure.
Yeah, and if you look at, honestly, what Tyrion sort of loses at this point, it's almost everything. Yeah. I mean, you think of it just where he was just a few, you know, obviously it's been a long time since we were back, since we've been doing the reread because of House of the Dragon and everything. But, I mean, just, you know, if you were just reading it, you just a few chapters ago, Tyrion was saving the city. He still had a small little battalion of men in the Moon Clan, and he had Bronn, his hired sellsword. Well, now, and of course, you know, Shay, but now Bronn has been knighted.
Yeah.
So now Bronn's kind of like, well, I don't really need you anymore. Not that he does that right here, because he still sort of serves and works with Tyrion, mm-hmm. but you know, you would have to, from Tyrion's point of view, imagine I've just lost a little bit of control there. His little army is gone. Not that they were great or anything, but it's still nice to know, hey, I've got some muscle, hired muscle in this incredibly dangerous place. And of course, he's no longer Hand of the King. And not only is he no longer Hand of the King, but his father's back, the one person who will put him in his place and tell him, you know, you will do this, you will do that.
And Cersei has had her father's ear for a full month at this point, and has even sent a maester to come check on him. And then there's a line, you know, where Tyrion's basically like, yeah, she's trying to kill me. And Tywin's like, she was worried as just the rest of us. And I actually had a moment, and I'd like to hear what you think about this, Matt, but like, do you think Cersei actually may have been worried? Like, do you think maybe she really was trying to make sure that he was okay? I know she tried to have him killed on the battlefield, but with her dad coming back, like, I don't know. Do you think there's any remorse there at all? Or do you think Cersei is totally off
the butt? I do think that there are moments where Cersei does somewhat feel something for Tyrion. In the show, they don't do it, but in the book, the moment where Tyrion tells her that Stannis killed Renly, where she picks him up. She's like so overcome with like, she's like picks him up. She's like, are you serious? Like, yeah, I mean, you know, so like I think there are certainly moments where that is the case, but I think they're very few and far. I mean, I think there's probably maybe like four or five moments where I think that's like one. But I think really outside of that, there's like maybe two or three where you could sort of point to and say, okay, maybe there's a moment where Cersei actually does somewhat genuinely care. Because at the end of the day, Cersei's not dumb, and she knows, especially Tyrion is, at the end of the day, Tyrion is a Lannister. He's going to be on her side for the, like, the betterment of House Lannister.
I mean, he's clearly useful. He won Blackwater.
Right. He did.
Like, maybe technically Tywin won, and the Tyrells probably won Blackwater, but Tyrion, I mean, definitely held
Tyrion
it.
Tyrion deserves 70% of the credit.
He led the charge. I mean, I'm with him whenever he's going at his father and being like, how about some damn respect around?
Well,
here?
In
like,
the chains and
yes,
the, which is a and great the thing. And the pyromancy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very, so I mean, I feel almost dumb suggesting that maybe Cersei did have some goodwill to sending a maester, because, I mean, you know, she did try to have him killed on the battlefields, which is all he's thinking about. But I don't know. I just thought about that. Or maybe Tywin's overestimating Cersei and thinking that she has the right, you know, the best brains to do something like this. I don't know. It was interesting to think about that and like what Cersei has been up to this entire month that Tyrion has been out. But we see him go to complete worst case scenario. He's panicked and he's losing it. And you're right. It's because he doesn't have any more power left. He's just a Lannister again. And the funny thing is if you look at Game of Thrones Tyrion, he'd probably be happy about that. Hey, go drink. Go do whatever you want. Go back to Casterly Rock. Like you can just run amok there. No one's going to pay attention to you. But now that he's had that taste of power, I think he wants it back.
Yeah. You know what's honestly sort of something I kind of think about sometimes, though, with Tyrion, though, is that at the end of the day, he is his own worst enemy.
Yes.
Really, the only person to ever really do any damage to Tyrion is Tyrion, because Tyrion opens himself up to attacks. I still always believe that him being Hand of the King was a test. Like if he had not taken Shay, I'm not saying Tywin would have come back and been like, okay, you're finally in my good graces and all of these things. He still probably would have came back and still been like, I'm Hand of the King. But, you know, does Tyrion then get in trouble for killing Joffrey? Some of these other things? I don't necessarily know. Tywin would have, whether it's just respect or something, I do think Tywin would have, he would have given Tyrion some seat of power, you know, I mean, or something. I mean, Tyrion could have been commander of the City Watch.
Yeah, I will say this. I think that Cersei loses pretty much all leverage that she had in that feud because she doesn't have the whore to punish, right? And I'll brutalize Tommen just as bad, which a lot of what we get into in this chapter between Tyrion and Tyrion is the fact that he is very, very, very upset that Tyrion threatened to beat and lash Tommen. And, you know, of course, Tyrion says, I would never do that. And it's like, well, you sent Marcella to Dorne. And he would have never had any of this. He would have never had a piece to be leaned on or blackmailed if he hadn't brought Shay. If he had just not brought Shay, he would have been okay.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think he, in some ways, he's his own worst enemy. And we also get our first mentions of the Kettle Blacks here, you know, have to be one of my most hated families. Like you got to give it to them. I mean, they're making a way for themselves here, but the Kettle Blacks are some of the most dense, dumb pieces of shit. I can't stand them, dude.
Oh god, so I hate stupid. Them. let me just read a little bit here. Sort of get us in the chapter a little bit here. So one of just sort of the first lines here. So he woke to the creak of old iron hinges. Who, he croaked. At least he had his voice back. Raw and hoarse though it was, the fever was still on him, and Tyrion had no notion of the hour. How long had he slept this time? He was so weak, so damnedly weak. Who, he called again, more loudly. Torchlight spilled through the open door, but within the chamber, the only light came from the stub of a candle beside his head. When he saw the shape moving towards him, Tyrion shivered. Here in Maegor's Holdfast, every servant was in the queen's pay, so any visitor might be another of Cersei's catspaws, sent to finish the work Sir Mandon had begun. Then the man stepped into the candlelight, got a good look at the dwarf's pale face, and chortled, "Cut yourself shaving, did you?" Tyrion's fingers went to his great gash that ran above one eye down to his jaw, across what remained of his nose. The proud flesh was still raw and warm to the touch with a fearful big razor. Yes. And so then it's brawn. But you can just even see just sort of that, like setting the tone. It's like, man, it's Tyrion's like he wakes up and he's in danger.
Yeah. Completely. I think George actually did a great job in the beginning of this chapter, kind of setting up the feeling of like, you know, just being discombobulated, like coming out of a sleep and being like, where am I? What am I doing? You know, that's me every time I take melatonin in a hotel room. I'm like, where am I? I have been transported to a different realm. And then we go on and we have the conversation between Bronn, but also one of the things I like that George did here is that Tyrion has to wear like maester's robes or something. Like it's like oversized robes and pants. So he like looks like ludicrous when he's walking to them through the halls and he sees Sir Adam and everything. It's like just showing that complete decline of status, even in the way that he dresses. Like they couldn't even go get him some proper clothing. Not good.
Yeah.
Not good at all.
Yeah. You know, another thing structurally, just as I'm sort of looking at some of the text here, thinking, you know, we're only a couple chapters in. So this book starts with a Jamie chapter, which I still think is one of the most important chapters in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it to me is when I was like, really like, oh my God, this series is like amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Was when you get that Jamie one. Then we did the Catelyn chapter. Then we got the Arya chapter. So one of the things these sort of do is actually piece together sort of the structure of the book. Yeah. And sort of fill in the gaps in between, because the next chapter we get to is Davos, which actually starts almost identically. Like Davos wakes up on a rock and he's like,
he's down.
Yeah, like he's just looking around and there's like destruction everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like this is sort of the same thing. But again, as we've covered some of this stuff, it's sort of just like, okay, a lot of things have shifted, most of it sort of power wise, but it's just sort of interesting. And I love these sort of early chapters because you just get to see. You know, George is like, in one way, he accomplishes so many things. And like, this is, again, it's one of the things when we're talking about theories, I love it because you get to dive into the deep, ooh, like lore wise. But when we go back to the chapters, you just get to talk about like George's writing a little bit, which is That's something right. we don't talk about. But it's just so great, like the way he does this, because one of the things I've always. You know, reading Wheel of Time, I think that Robert Jordan does a really good job of this, is the first like 10 chapters. You could pick up that book having not read some of the other ones and not feel totally lost.
Mm-hmm.
So it is always interesting because you kind of see some of that in some of those early books or some of the early chapters of any book with like in a big series. And I know you've read a lot of those, Jimmy, but yeah. I think George is one of the best at doing that, where it's like a small thing you don't really think about, but it's, you know, when you get a look at it chapter by chapter and overanalyze it like we're doing, it's like, man, that's just like genius on his part. I mean, he's so good at it.
Yeah, a lot of authors, especially in today's age, struggle with exposition and info dumps, especially when it comes to later books in the series, whenever they're trying to remind people of some things. And George does just enough to jog your memory. But he won't generally, he does sometimes, but not usually, he won't outright tell you everything that's happened to that point. It's something that I look out for whenever I'm reading into a big series. I read a ton of fantasy and I read a lot.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line. Prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Brandon Sanderson, but Brandon Sanderson will never let you forget anything ever.
Yeah.
Like there'll even be times, and this is kind of a side tangent, but there'll be times where like a character hasn't been in the book for like a couple chapters and you're thinking about it, you're like, oh, I wonder what happened to this character. And just as you think that, he'll like mention the character and then it's a part of a twist. And you're like, I wish you would have just not mentioned it because I would have never seen this coming. But now like
right.
You signposted that I'm supposed to remember this character. George does a phenomenal job, especially in this Tyrion chapter, of referencing things in a logical manner, which we will be talking about Blackwater. We will be talking about the fact that Bronn got knighted. The Hound ran away because Tyrion's perspective. Tyrion has no idea that the Hound abandoned King Joffrey.
Right.
Yeah. So this is all news. And then we get, well, what about King Joffrey? Was he injured? So it's coming out in the dialogue, but it's not one of those things where like, you know, two people are talking that supposedly have known each other for years in a book, but then they repeat things that they should already have known. Like, I'd say, Matt, well, of course, you know, we run the Bend the Knee podcast. Like, that'd be terrible dialogue, but books do it all the time. George gets away with it here because Tyrion's been knocked out for a month. He right. almost died. So he gets all the info fresh. He reacts to it, which is really entertaining as the reader, but we're also getting our memories jogged, and we get a ton of stuff here. Like I said, we get the Hound, we get Tyrick Lannister's mentioned in this chapter, which is banana sandwich, which also talks about the riot, which we're going to talk about here in just a little bit. Talks about the Tyrells. He says, they spit on me while they throw roses at the Tyrells' feet. So we see already there's a big feud building there, and the Tyrells are a new player in King's Landing. What's going to happen there? So it's just like building all this stuff, and it's almost overwhelming. And this is just from one chapter. It's crazy.
And not only that, but he also hints at all the things to come inside of the chapter. It's so cool. Like, even going back, I'm just re-looking at this here. When the line I already read, when Tyrion pushes over his nose, right? Tyrion's fingers went to the great gash that ran from above one eye down to his jaw, across what remains of his nose. The proud flesh was still raw and warm to the touch. Now, he says the proud flesh, right? He could have just said the flesh. Mm-hmm. He could have just said, you know, the cut was still raw, but he says the proud flesh. So not only is it just the injury, but it's also Tyrion's pride, right? I mean, that's another thing that's lost here, is he was the one that saved the Battle of the Blackwater. He was the one that was serving as Hand of the King and turning everything around. You know, I mean, you got to think about also, when he takes over as Hand of the King, it's not like he's doing so at a time when everything's good. He takes over at a time when Robert Baratheon, the king of the last like 20 years, has just died. And there's now a war of five kings, and Tyrion takes over Hand as kings.
A civil war.
Yeah, as of King's Landing. And it's not to mention Daenerys Targaryen's over there with dragons. So, I mean, it's kind of a big deal that when he steps into that role, and now he's reduced to nothing. And it's just like small little stuff like that, which is just one of the things I love when we get to go back and read the chapters and sort of just view over just George's writing, because I think it's just, I think.
Yeah, true descriptions, and that's where the good are separated from the great a lot of times. Like, I think that the proud marking on his face, I think that you could probably dive into symbolism for that over the entire series.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I mean, it's just so good. So, okay, so continuing on here a little bit. So again, he's asking a lot of questions, like, what about Robb Stark? And so we're getting this, right? We're getting these. It's the whole info dump of what's going on, and we're getting it, you know, through Bronn telling Tyrion, and then you get these sort of like things, you know, when Tyrion's, you get these sort of things about it, right? You know, so here's like one. What's half a nose on a face like mine? But speaking of pretty, is Marjorie Tyrell in King's Landing yet? No, she's coming. Though the city's mad with love for her. The Tyrells have been carting food up from Highgarden and giving it away in her name. Hundreds of wains each day. There's thousands of Tyrell men swaggering about with little golden roses sorn on their doublets. And not a one is buying his own wine. Wife, widow, or whore, the women are all giving up their virtue to peach fuzz boy with a golden rose in his teat. And then Tyrion thinks, they spit on me and buy drinks for the Tyrells, right? And so, like, that's the way a lot of this chapter goes, is you get that little inner dialogue with Tyrion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're also getting key information, like you said, about Robb Stark, and Tyrion questions, like, is the boy blundering for the first time in the open field? Because what is there to do at west of Duskendale? Which, you know, we could just read that and say, oh, okay, whatever. But when we get to those chapters later, we see that plan kind of like take hold.
Right.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's just these early chapters, honestly, sometimes are like the most important chapters of the book, because they literally hint at like everything.
Yeah,
I mean, even go back to the first chapter in Game of Thrones. They find the direwolves. Okay, they found the direwolves, one for each Stark boy. But how did the direwolf die? Oh, it was killed by a stag. Like, okay, you don't really think anything of it.
Yeah,
and then it could be symbolism for like the whole thing. Yeah,
Tyrion's first scene is talking to his father, and his last scene will be almost talking with his father, talking a little bit, but also doing other things.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Did you have any other big takeaways, Jimmy, you wanted to dive into here?
No, I don't think so. I think that covers the chapter pretty well. I mean, the big thing here is that Tywin says that, you know, you'll never have Casterly Rock. And I think that it puts Tyrion in his entire existence into perspective. And I think that that will probably explain why Tyrion goes the way he does.
Yeah. So just real quick. One thing I did want to bring up. So when he does ask for King's Landing, or not King's Landing, Casterly Rock, this is where things get obviously a little heated. You know, his father's mouth grew hard. Your brother's birthright, the Knights of the King's Guard are forbidden to marry or father children to hold land. You know that as well as I. The day Jaime put on that white cloak, he gave up his claim to Casterly Rock, but never once have you acknowledged its past time. I want you to stand up before the realm and proclaim that I am your son and your lawful heir. Lord Tywin's eyes were a pale green flecked with gold, as luminous as they were merciless. Casterly Rock, he declared in a flat, cold, dead tone, and then never. The word hung between them, sharp, poisoned. I knew the answer before I asked, Tyrion said. 18 years since Jaime joins the Kingsguard, and I never once raised the issue. I must have known. I must have always known. Why? He made himself ask, though he knew he would rue the question. You asked that. You who killed your mother to come in this world. You're an ill-made, devious, disobedient, spiteful little creature full of envy, lust, and low cunning. Men's laws give you the right to bear my name and display my color. Since I cannot prove that you are not mine to teach me humility, the gods have condemned me to watch you waddle about wearing that proud lion that was my father's sigil and his father's before him. But neither gods nor men shall ever compel me to let you turn Casterly Rock into your whorehouse. My whorehouse, the dawn broke. Tyrion understood all at once where this bile had come from. He ground his teeth together and said, Cersei told you about Aliaya. Is that her name? I confess, I cannot remember the name of all your whores. Who was the one you married as a boy? Taisha, he spat out the answer, defiant. And that camp follower on the Green Fork? Why do you care? He asked, unwilling even to speak Shay's name in his presence. I don't, no more than I care if they live or die. So it sort of goes on there, and they just talk actually a little bit Aliaya, right? And then the next one I find in your bed, I'll hang, is what Tywin says, which this is a reread, so we all know. Huge foreshadowing, except it's the other way around. But one of the things that's kind of interesting here is that Tywin specifically asks, who is the one you brought? Who is the one you took with you from the Green Fork? So does he know? Does he...
Yeah, I mean, because Cersei's not privy to that information, so where would Tywin have learned that?
Well, she's there at the camp when like that battle is getting ready to take place. So perhaps Tywin knows that Tyrion's
had a whore there. That, well, yeah, and he does, right? Because he says, like, don't bring that whore.
Don't right.
So that must be it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and of course, so a lot of big things there. One, Tysha's name is mentioned, which I think is mentioned. But it is mentioned in a Game of Thrones when they're having that thing. And Tysha is actually a huge part of the end of why Tyrion kills him, is because he learns the truth from Jaime.
That's right.
He learns the truth about what actually happened to her at the very end. Again, here in the first chapter. But if you go back a little bit, this is one of the huge indicators for a lot of people that believe the Tyrion is perhaps a Targaryen theory, is a lot of this right here, because he's so, you know, he's talking about when you were born, you killed your mother. I have to call you my son, even though I don't really want to. I can't prove that you're mine.
Yeah.
So a lot of it goes to that. So, I mean, what do you think about the is Tyrion a Targaryen theory, Jimmy?
Well, we do know that the timeline doesn't match up for him to be the Mad Kings, because that was always the speculation. There's a lot of weirdness between Tywin and the Mad King, right? And say that he would like flirt with Tywin's wife, everything. We should dive into that a little bit more and look at the hard, cold, hard facts. But as far as I know, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Raven, but I don't believe the timeline actually makes sense for Tywin or for Tyrion to be. To be the Mad Kings. Now, does that mean another Targaryen wasn't involved? Who knows? Now, what I will say about Tyrion being a Targaryen is that his eyes are always pointed to, right? Are always pointed to the fact that they're not just like the Lannisters. They actually remind everyone of the Targaryens as well. The only thing that has ever been really not concerning, but interesting, we'll say compelling to me, is the fact that Tyrion has dragon dreams. I find that to be very strange. I think it's in a Game of Thrones where he talks about it. It could be Clash of Kings, but he talks about his dragon dreams. And that's where we hear about him burning Casterly Rock and all of this other stuff. That's what I find to be interesting about the theory. I don't necessarily know if it's true, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was written in a way where George left it open to where he could use it if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the timeline, the way it sort of works is that obviously, you know, there people point to the fact that the Mad King may have taken, you know, liberties on Tywin's marriage night, right? Like King's Right, joking about it. Obviously, that couldn't have been like Tyrion because Tyrion is born after Jaime and Cersei. So it would be like when he's Hand of the King, or, you know, there's like a tourney that takes place where it's like, okay, that could have worked. For Tyrion to have been it, you know, that like their relationship would have obviously, or whatever the Mad King's doing, mm-hmm. Whether it's an open or forced relationship, I think there's certainly possibilities for it, but I've just always gone to the idea of especially, you know, people point to the "You're no son of mine" line. I guess I've just always thought that it would sort of ruin the Tyrion Tywin dynamic.
Yeah, I agree.
I think to me, it's always like that's sort of the point. Like the mm-hmm. point is that Tyrion is Tywin's son. And the point is that Tyrion kills his own father. I think that's sort of, like, it makes it mean more. I will say though, on the other side, the idea that if that Jaime and Cersei actually could be Targaryens, which is like, you know, it wouldn't really do anything, like, because I don't think it's not going to really play into anything. But if that were the case, then it would sort of explain potentially like a mad Cersei and some of these mm-hmm. other things. And then also make their incest, I guess, a little less weird because they're Targaryens and whatever,
a little more congruent with the lore.
I guess but to me, that would actually make it even, that would then even strengthen the Tyrion Tywin relationship and make it that much more impactful, because no, Tyrion actually is your only son and Jaime isn't.
Yeah, so I think Cersei and Jaime being Targaryens would be a lot more interesting. I think there's less of a chance of that being the case. But
there's
I just agree
go with it.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think we need it. The one interesting thing that if Tyrion were a Targaryen is that it would put a whole new meaning to Three Heads of the Dragon, especially if Aegon is fake, if he is Fagon, and then you have Dany, Jon, and Tyrion, like that would be wild. But again, I think that you're right. I think that it would cheapen the relationship that we have seen built with Tywin and him. And also, let's be clear, Tywin is an elitist prick. And we hate the fact that he thinks he can just disregard Jaime's vows and give him Casterly Rock. Like he can, like they're above the law, and nobody likes that. Right. So the fact that Tywin can't come to terms with the fact that he spawned a dwarf, like it's some awful thing. Like that is very important for Tywin's characterization. I think is the fact that Tyrion is his son and he refuses to claim it. Like I feel like Tywin wants everyone to take this responsibility, but he won't take responsibility for himself at times.
Right.
And he's the worst.
He ignores Jaime and Cersei.
Yeah. So often, like, he almost refuses to accept reality in multiple circumstances. Like even when we're talking about like Cersei, maybe was looking out for Tyrion, possibly for real when the Maester was sent. But like, we only get that because Tywin says it. So is Tywin also turning a blind eye to that reality as well? I think that's probably the most logical thing to go with. So yeah, Tywin is just the worst. He thinks his shit doesn't stink and he's a hypocrite. Especially when we see him laying with Shay. It's like that actually is his arc, is that he is just he's not capable of accepting reality.
Yeah, I will say that I don't think, one, I don't think Tyrion is a Targaryen. I also don't think we'll ever get any confirmation to it, I think, again, a lot of the buildup and everything is for the moment where Tyrion kills Tywin. So we like the idea that, okay, maybe Tyrion isn't, but Jaime and Cersei are, because I mean, you know, just exploring some of the theories suggested throughout, you know, the 20 years we've been waiting for Winds of Winter. You know, I don't think that will ever come out to be, because one, there's nothing to really do with it. And two, if you did do it, like, what does it do? I mean, what does it do? Like, we're too late in the game, I think, for a lot of these theories. Like, even Shay, I think we're too late in the game to ever find out. Like, what would revealing information about Shay right now, as we're moving to Winds of Winter and Dance of Dragons, you know, assuming when they come out, what would that do to the overall story?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who would tell us? Because it's still a mystery. I mean, so like, where'd she come from? What's her deal? I don't know that we're ever going to get it. I think it's just, she was there in that moment. It's just going to be left. It's going to be left, which is something I think you have to think about when we think about a lot of these theories. Some we know we're going to have to get answers to, because you just can't not explain them. But I think that might be one where it's like, I don't know that we're ever going to get anything more on Shay.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get anything more on Shay. You know, one interesting thing about Tyrion that someone pointed out to me a long time ago is that he has met all of the would-be dragons. Like, he met Jon, he met Fagon, and then he's meeting Dany. Like, he has had contact with all three heads. So him being like, you know, like maybe somehow that thematically were, I don't know. But that was just something someone pointed out to me one time that I thought was really fascinating. It's like, yeah, he is the one character that's kind of seen everyone.
He could be the prince that's promised. He could be Lightbringer. Oh, he's meant to unite them.
Oh my God. Maybe.
There we go. Okay. Well, so one name that was kind of popped up in here, and we're going to do like a full episode on this, but we'll briefly touch about it. Mm-hmm. Just because I've received like 5 ravens from the same person about this. And so I definitely want to make sure that we dive into it here. Let me just get this pulled up here. But we're going to talk a little bit about Tyrick Lannister and the riot, right, Jimmy? The King's Landing riot. It doesn't happen here, but, you know, because... Here we go. So Randall Barker has sent us this many times. He goes by Dick Crabs Squire. Awesome. Has sent us this, and it's a picture, and it's from season 2, episode 2 with the riot. Now remember, this is where Joffrey is in the cart and he's with Margaery, and I don't think Margaery's there actually. He's in the cart and then he gets out and people start throwing food at him and everything. And he sent us this picture, which I'll have on the screen. And it's somebody who looks sort of like Varys. And I guess the idea, though, is could Varys have sort of started the riot? But from my remember, is Varys is actually there and urging Joffrey to get back into it. So I actually, while this person in the picture does sort of look like Varys, I don't know that it could be Varys himself. But I guess in general, the idea though that Varys is the one who maybe has birds or something start that riot has a lot of weight to it.
This is something like Matt has said, we're actually going to dive pretty deep in on Tyrick Lannister, because like he's mentioned in this Tyrion 1 chapter in A Storm of Swords, and it's a question that I always forget, and that is, where is he? What happened to him? Many think he's dead, but I would say that the fact that Tyrick Lannister is mentioned multiple times since his disappearance and there's no body would say that rules of fantasy mean that he is alive and being used for other reasons. Now, there's something's going on with Tyrick Lannister for sure. So I think there's a much more compelling theory. Like we'll discuss the next time we get together, but let's just look at this, you know, Varys angle. So the idea behind Varys being behind the riot is that it actually gives an opportunity to snag Tyrick Lannister. Now, why would he want Tyrick Lannister? Well, Some people think a high profile hostage would be great for Fagon or Aegon. We'll just call him Aegon because we don't know if he's fake yet. Aegon coming over, all this plans with Illyrio. Some people have suggested that Tyrek is being taken away by Varys to be kind of bribed. Say, hey, you know, when we come over with Aegon and he takes the throne, you can be the head of a House of Lannister because all these other traitors will be executed. In this way, they still have control of Casterly Rock, all of the people in the West. And he's kind of like the bargaining chip, and he's kind of going to be used as a figurehead because he's like, dude, he's so far down in the succession. I think he's like seven or like 17th, maybe. He's like a cousin of a cousin or something. So it's like, how many of the Lannisters are they planning to kill? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how that works, but there has been some people say that it would be a hostage situation. Like, hey, we have Tyrek, which I think Tywin would go, okay.
How about it?
Yeah. Good luck. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because he is the son of Tyget Lannister, who is the one who went missing, who like went over to Valyria, who like tried to go find the old Valyrian steel sword of House Lannister. So like that is certainly like just kind of interesting that he just happens to be like the son of that person. But yeah, I think the idea of him possibly having Tyrek as a potential, whether he turns him into his own little spy, or he's using him for information, or it's going to come into play later. You know, Varys is somebody who's always like, especially in the books, like 8 steps ahead, right?
Yeah.
The only thing I can use to sort of discredit that is why wouldn't he mention that to Kevin Lannister at the end of a Dance with Dragons to say, hey, like I've also got him and I'm planning on doing something with him before he kills Kevin Lannister in that thing, which again is like enormous difference from the show.
Yeah.
Like huge difference from the show, like monumentally massive difference from the show is that like, we could honestly do like a 2 or 3 hour episode just on the epilogue of A Dance of Dragons, and someday we will, and the sort of significance of that. But yeah, I do think potentially, I mean, the idea of Varys starting that riot makes a lot of sense because who knows what happens in a riot? Maybe the king gets killed.
We're not sure.
Yeah. Or certainly, or it lowers his approval rating and people don't like him. I mean, Varys is definitely up to something, you know, whether it's installing Daenerys or installing a Targaryen.
I don't think we can rule Varys out at this moment. The only reason why I don't find it as likely is because the other theory that with Tyrek, which we'll cover in another episode, is way more interesting and honestly kind of nutty. Like, I can't believe that I haven't heard this before, like 2 months ago, whenever we were looking up stuff on Tyrek and we were kind of preparing for the reread. But yeah, I mean, Varys is clearly up to something. I could see them wanting to put a Lannister back in charge over at Casterly Rock, but not one that is that close to Tywin at this point. It does make sense. And I wouldn't rule it out. I actually don't think this is too far-fetched. You know, I don't know how fast Varys can relay information. So what if he didn't even plan the riot, but during the riot, he just said, hey, this is a great opportunity. They'll snatch old Tyrek with his bowl cut. I assume he has a bowl cut. I don't know why.
Yeah. We don't really know. There's not really a lot of, he's honestly a character who's just sort of mentioned and he's gone missing. So yeah, that will come back up because George doesn't just do that. He doesn't just drop in something. So,
and hey, maybe this is a drop storyline because we know that, you know, things have gotten unruly. Like, is there a chance George loses this one in the shuffle? It could happen. I hope it doesn't.
It could. So, all right. Well, with that, like we said, we're going to come back and do definitely a bigger version of that. And Jimmy and I also just did last week. We did like a huge Patreon episode about Arya and sort of Sansa in Winds of Winter. That was like an hour long episode. So you can find that over on Apple Premium or on Patreon. But yeah, so as always, thank you guys for who support us over there. So with that, guys, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords Davos 1.
Let's go. And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.